or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of September 11th, 2016. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and, well, we've got a special episode here because we've got a guest on who we don't get to have sitting around the virtual conference table very often. We're pleased to have him, and that person is Information Week's Director of Audience Development, Scott Ferguson. Scott, welcome to Information Week Live.
Kurt, as always, I am very thankful to be here, even though it is far too infrequent.
Well, we're glad that you were able to take some time away from the busy and important stuff that you normally spend time doing, and want to talk about a couple of things today. And one of them is really centered around some of the changes we've been making here at Information Week because, you know, once upon a time, Information Week was the place where you came to get breaking news about the IT industry. That was a time, I mean, when Information Week started, there was no internet for people to go to for information. So once a week, this bundle of paper landed on people's desks and told them what was news. And today, well, it's Twitter and Snapchat and all kinds of sites that cover breaking news. So Information Week has adapted, and we're talking now about why things are important to IT managers, leaders, and executives. And that's a significant change in both what we do at Information Week and how we reach those audience members. Don't you think, Scott?
I think so, Kurt. As you mentioned, and this is going to go sort of off topic of technology, but in a world where, you know, everybody is a publisher, how do you distinguish yourself? How do you reach the audience that still likes what you do, but how do you give them something that's different from what the next guy is looking at? And I think what we're trying to do is kind of bring that into the next level and sort of educate people a little bit more. When I started off in this business, I had an executive editor by the name of Jim McGarvey, who I believe is now long retired. And he said, well, if you want to make a lot of money, tell people what the future of publishing is going to look like and how you can get young people to, at that time, read the newspaper. And he goes, you'll be a millionaire overnight. So I don't think when he posed that question to me, going back, I guess, about 18 years ago, I don't think any of us have ever actually answered that question. We thought the internet itself would do that. And it's just sort of made everything even more complicated than it was in the very beginning. So what we're trying to do, what we hope to do, because you never know if something's going to work until it does work, is give people a sense of belonging within their community and how they can learn, better educate themselves, and also, what can we do for your career? How can we help you develop? Where do you need to take that next step? And I think with some of the focus switching around, I think that's what we're doing. We're kind of doubling down on what it means to be an IT person these days and what you need to do in order to get to that next level that you're looking for, or if you're happy at your current level, what do you need to do to stay steady? What skills do you need? What do you need to know in the marketplace?
You know, I think it's interesting because in many ways, there are lots of places where you can now go just to get basic information. As I said, if you follow the right people and sites on Twitter, you have this constant stream of stuff. So if all you care about is which new products are coming out and what someone somewhere thinks about the quality of one product or another, there are lots of places to get that. What is less common is telling people and helping them understand why the quality of a particular category of equipment matters, why different moves matter, why a particular technology matters. And when I talk to a lot of the executives that I get to, you know, they tell me that they really would like to have some help with that. What do you hear? I know that you talk to a lot of people in the industry. Do you get that same sense from them that there's so much just basic data out there that they would love having some help in figuring out why they should care?
I think so. And we also have to look at how IT has sort of changed a lot. And I've been doing, I actually hit 10 years this year covering the IT business. I know that still puts me about 20 years behind you, Kurt. But when you talk about IT and how we think about it, you know, what we hear a lot about is what does IT need to do to satisfy the internal needs of the business? In other words, that sort of front-facing part of the business is sort of taken care of now. And how does IT work with the other parts of the business in order to deliver a better product? You have a situation where everybody is in the company is pretty technology savvy, and they know the systems, and they know how to use Salesforce, and they know how their computers work, and they know how their smartphones work. So the equipment, not so much anymore, but what do we do in terms of there's a problem in this part of the company that really calls for an IT solution? What can we do to deliver that? And what can we do to make sure that we are of value to that other end of the company so they don't look at us as just, well, everything kind of runs on its own now and I can just download this from the cloud. What does IT do? So I think a lot of it is about positioning yourself within the company to deliver value, not so much to the IT department itself, but to all those other departments that are there. And that's where your value add is sort of nowadays.
You know, it's interesting talking about that value add. It's really a change in the role of IT. And one of the people on our staff who has been around, as you and I both have, long enough to have seen multiple shifts in the role of IT is Information Week editor-at-large Charlie Babcock, who now joins us from the West Coast. Charlie, welcome to Information Week Live.
Greetings, Kurt. Greetings, Scott.
Charlie, Scott and I have been talking about some of the ways that things are shifting here at Information Week, where we're talking more about why leaders should care about technology than about just breaking news about new products in technology. But in a way, you've spent a lot of time over the past few years telling people why they should care. Do you find that that's a different way of telling the story than just breaking the news?
It is, Kurt. But in a sense, we've tried to do some of it in the past. Today, the news cycles are dominated by things like latest features of the iPhone 7 or an Android update that didn't work out or a vulnerability someplace. And you can get caught up doing these things over and over again. And I think there's a little fatigue headline fatigue setting in some cases. But I think we've always tried to get a little bit behind the scenes and offer more of an in-depth look. The thing I wish the yardstick that could be applied in addition to news value would be usefulness of the information. Can an IT manager, in some fashion, make use of this information? Does it help him and his weekly job? It doesn't need to be immediate help, but is this good information to have absorbed and file away for future reference?
Very good. You know, I like those metrics that you're putting on there, and I would love to apply some of that. Each of you in the past few days have written pieces here at Information Week looking at related topics. Scott, I want to look at your piece first. You did something on the size of the public cloud market. Now, not to give away the ending, but in my way of thinking, the answer is it's doggone huge and getting nothing but bigger. Did you find, as you were doing the research for that piece, anything that surprised you? Do you think that public cloud for the business market is getting bigger than people thought it would be by this point?
Well, actually, what I kind of found interesting about that when you looked at what Gartner, specifically, of course, because Gartner is the catalyst that sparked the article as they had some new research out, is that the cloud could be even bigger, that a lot of companies are still looking at public cloud. I think Charlie can speak a lot to private cloud and the efforts that have been made internally to bring cloud computing to a company. But when you talk about public cloud, your Amazon Web Services, your Microsoft Azure, Google, IBM, et cetera, is that it could be even bigger than what it currently is. And many companies still view it as a test, as a production platform right now, just to see how it could work. There's numerous reasons why, but most companies still view it as a bit unstable, a security concern, and can they get not so much the value out of it? I think we've kind of have come to the point where the cloud is seen as something valuable, both to the business side, i.e. you're saving money on internal equipment, but also to the IT side, where it's a lot easier to do your production and your testing and your deployment in the cloud. But there's still a somewhat hesitant view of the cloud, even though it is getting more popular and it is growing by leaps and bounds. And that's sort of what was underneath there, that there's still, we still have so much more to go, even though we've considered the cloud part of this IT infrastructure that we're creating for these different businesses. So that's what I kind of found interesting. And as sort of like a dovetail to that, you know, let's talk about the news of the day. Is Oracle just released their latest quarterly results on Thursday evening. We're speaking on Friday. What was the headlines from there? Cloud deployments have doubled, while traditional software deployments, traditional on-premise software that Oracle delivers, is going down. And so Oracle, like many of these companies, find themselves both pushed and pulled by the cloud. So again, a lot of software that's being done on premise, but more and more a need to sort of get into the cloud, not only selling it, but adjusting to this new model. And as Charlie has written about numerous times, what Amazon has been sort of able to do as its side business in AWS, and the ability to offer a lot of different platforms and technologies and features in AWS that nobody thought possible. And this is Amazon's, obviously, secondary business to the retail. So I think you really do have quite a bit of you know, momentum there, but there's more even coming as we speak.
Charlie, as Scott referred to, you have been writing quite a bit about the different cloud options that companies have. And as a matter of fact, you wrote a piece this week. You've written a couple, to be honest, this week, most recently on Salesforce, which is in many ways the company that absolutely defines software as a service for a lot of businesses. And you were also talking about how to commission your first virtual machine in AWS. So that's much more of an infrastructure as a service play. When you were doing the research on these two pieces, did you get the sense that companies really treat them as two entirely separate things in terms of their attitude towards the cloud? Or in the minds of a lot of IT people, is all of the cloudy kind of stuff just all mixed up together?
Oh, I think it's pretty distinct to the people who know they have to work with it. Salesforce was the pioneer of software as a service, as we all know, but it has grown into such a CRM powerhouse that it now sports kind of a full platform. It will help you develop applications that will work with your Salesforce applications. You can customize your Salesforce applications. They provide you with a custom language, Apex, that you can work with your applications and extend them. And their database-type services that serve their own applications so well can be tapped into if you're building your new application. And you get access to the data in your CRM applications. You get access to data that you store in that database. It's all a way to do applications based on a software as a service platform. And Salesforce has really got a head of steam up in terms of enabling people to do this. Microsoft maybe has gotten a little bigger as a software as a service vendor as a whole. Salesforce is still going to kind of be the battleship bow cutting through the waves when it comes to customer relationship management and the Salesforce itself. So that is one thing, and it's very distinct, and people who have been working with it for years know exactly kind of what the elements of the platform and how they can manipulate it and get it to do the things that they want. When it comes to infrastructure as a service, and Amazon would be the pure play of infrastructure as a service, that is something quite different. The people working with Amazon, they're not going to be confused as to which place they're at. Am I at Salesforce now or am I at Amazon? You will carry a lot more responsibility into Amazon when you go there and try to do things. Amazon makes you responsible for knowing what kind of machine you want, how you want to start it up, how you're going to manage it, what it'll ask you, what level of security you're seeking to implement, and then expect you to commission the it's in effect a private center or a virtual private facility where you put your server on a VPN and no one else can access it unless you've given them permission. So it's a different amount of engineering that you hit when you go to Amazon. It's a very solid infrastructure. I would disagree with people who think the cloud is still insecure. It may be insecure in ways that we don't know, but it is at least as secure in all the ways the enterprises are secure. It's less insecure in the way the enterprises are insecure. So I vote at this point, I vote up the cloud in terms of security. But still, you will bring to the infrastructure as a service, wherever you find it, a lot more of your own server administration and engineering skills than you do when you turn to Salesforce and software as a service.
Scott, I wanted to ask you, when Charlie was talking about the differences between these, one of the things that rung in my ears was that it seemed like he was describing an awful lot of expertise that's required for successfully building cloud installations on AWS or Azure or products like that. Do you get the sense when you're doing research on these things, when you're talking to the different companies, that that expertise is one of the restricting factors that we have on the growth of the cloud? Do you think that companies are still waiting and looking for people who have the expertise to build these cloud instances?
I think so, because what do we always hear when we talk about IT? We always hear about where is the skill set that I need to be successful, right? We talk about this ad nauseum all the time. I have this great business. I just need the people with the skill set to help me out. And it almost becomes a self-parody, because every few days you can see the 10 skill sets that are needed in IT. And you must wonder sometimes half-heartedly, like, is anybody teaching these skill sets, because they keep on coming up over and over again. And, you know, Kurt, as you know, right, everybody needs a Java expert at all times and all places to help with your various projects. There never seems to be enough Java people around. So I do think that. I think also to what Charlie was getting at, too, is because infrastructure as a service is a way for smaller businesses, as they see it, to grow. They might not have that sort of expertise at their fingertips that they need in order to develop what they actually need in order to get going. In other words, the platform is there for you, and it's inexpensive, and you can easier than building your own data center, but then it's getting those people in there that actually know how to build, how to get those APIs working, knowing what you need to take to the next level. And I think that's also, too, why you look at a startup in the Uber model, and you really have to admire them, because they are able to at least hire those skilled people that not only can now get you the car service that you need via app, but are now taking it to the next level and saying, well, we can do self-driving cars, and we're going to keep developing along those lines. So that's more of the rarity. I think that's why people talk about Uber, because it is the rarity there, as opposed to these thousands of other businesses that are struggling to make their ends meet to get their products off the ground at any given time. And that's why we admire like an Uber or another company along those lines, because it's able to give you that, the people that you need and the skills that you need to get everything going.
Well, Charlie, you know, you did talk about all of the different aspects of SaaS. So after a decade or more of the cloud being a realistic architecture for doing business and enterprise computing, is it getting any easier? I mean, are Amazon and Microsoft and all of the other companies that are out there offering SaaS platforms, infrastructure as a service, platform as a structure as a service, are they able to make it easier, or does it simply become more and more complex as it becomes more and more capable?
No, it really is getting simpler. All the vendors are striving to achieve greater degrees of ease of use and simplicity. and to a large measure they're succeeding. I perhaps can make it sound like it's terribly complicated to turn to Amazon, but once you are in there and making decisions, Amazon wizards take over and they build the things that you're directing them to build. Some of it is pre-formatted. You don't have infinite choice there. You select something that they have already learned how to assemble as a standard unit, and when you get that T2 or M3 or whatever instance you've decided upon, several decisions are going to be made for you and executed by a wizard. So in that sense, it is much, much simpler and can proceed much faster than anyone would on their own. There are still things to be done, but you also have a growing universe of companies that want to make it simpler. They are in business to interface something between you and the cloud so that it will work for you better than it's been able to in the past. And there's some excellent software companies designing applications that work on top of Salesforce or work on top of AWS, and they're available in a store or in an exchange for you to tap, and you don't have to do so much of that work yourself for what appear to be some reasonable costs. I think the Salesforce, given its concentration, given its the battleship cutting through CRM, you will find a pretty rich environment of third parties building applications meant to take advantage of the Salesforce data and do things with it. I'm in the process of talking to a big beer supplier, an international beer supplier, InBev, or rather AB InBev, after it became a Brazilian and a Belgian merger. And this company makes use of Salesforce, but they also make use of a third party that places a application on top of the Salesforce data, helps them do a particular aspect of their business to the nth degree because it knows how to make use of that data. So we are kind of to the second generation or even third generation of making use of software as a service. We now have software as a service on top of the software as a service. So I think I'd sum it up that way.
Well, I'm glad you did sum it up that way, because we've hit the point in the show where it's time for summing things up. It's hard to believe that we've gone through an entire show. I think this has been a fascinating conversation about the importance of the different cloud ecosystems. And frankly, I think it's a good illustration of the kind of content and the kind of information that Information Week is now bringing to our readers, our listeners, helping them understand why things are important rather than simply that something happened. We end every week by going around the virtual table and asking everyone what they're doing for the coming week, what's on their radar screen. So, Scott, I'm going to start with you. I know that you, like Susan Nunziata, our editorial director, who's occasionally a guest here, tend to keep your eye on pretty much everything that's happening at Information Week. What should people be on the lookout for in the coming few days? No, we seem to have lost Scott to the whims of technology. So, Charlie, I'm going to turn to you. What do you have coming up in the week to come that everyone should keep an eye out for?
Well, Kurt, as you know, here in San Francisco, Oracle Open World will be opening up Sunday night. Larry Ellison will talk, and other executives will be talking through the week. That'll be a big event here. I hope to be spending some time over there and talking to Oracle customers about what they're doing with all the new technology.
Outstanding. And how should people keep up with you on social media to find out when these articles hit the virtual pages of Information Week?
When I possibly can, I would be tweeting at BabcockCW as my handle.
Outstanding. And let me tell you, if you're listening, if cloud and open source are things that matter to you, you really need to be following Charlie there on Twitter, a great resource for everyone. I believe we have Scott back after his sojourn into the ether. And Scott was going to ask you, you keep an eye on everything at Information Week. What should people be on the lookout for in the coming few days?
I think, Kurt, we're going to have a couple other deep dives into some analytics and data management subjects that I think are going to be pretty interesting. I think, too, we are going to look a little bit more at some DevOps and some Agile subjects that I think folks will find of interest. I think we'll keep an eye on that. And if I'm looking out for Monday, considering if we can go a little off topic, if I'm looking out on Monday morning, I'm looking out to see what Apple says about the initial iPhone 7 release. Since that was today, be interesting to see where their numbers came from, especially if you looked at the market reaction to the Apple iPhone 7 unveiling. So I think that would be pretty interesting to look for to see if they managed to bounce back, since a lot of people were kind of holding their breath to see what Apple would come through. So that's a little bit more on the consumer-y side off of your data analytics and your DevOps sort of subjects.
Well, one of the things that is very true about enterprise technology today is that the consumer equipment has come in. So I think there are a lot of IT professionals who are going to be watching those iPhone 7 numbers, because that will give them a good idea of, frankly, the platform that they're going to be dealing with in their companies. Now, Scott, I know that you're also active on social media. How can people find you over there on the Tweety Pipes?
You can find me at ZDE Ferguson, and that is my Twitter handle.
Outstanding. As for me, I'm going to be writing a little bit less the first half of next week. I'm going to be off doing the convention at the Society for Professional Journalists. I'm speaking there on a panel regarding online trolls, something that should be entertaining and informative, bring back lots of new ways to tell stories and lots of new technologies. I've also got some pieces coming up in the next week on DevOps, on Agile. And if you haven't seen it yet, had a podcast go up today at Information Week on the secrets of successful CIOs. I interviewed a well-known executive recruiter named Martha Heller, who has a brand new book out called Be the Business. We talked about what's in that book, what she's seen as she has looked at the executive ranks, and why all of the things that we've been talking about are important. She also talks a great deal about the kind of alliances people have to make and the role of the CIO in a business environment that's seen the entire C-suite grow. Well, that's it for us for this week. I'd like to thank my guests, Information Week's editor-at-large, Charlie Babcock, and Information Week's director of audience development, Scott Ferguson. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us today. I'd also like to thank all of you for listening. As always, you can find us here every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern live. And if you're here with us live, we hope that you will join in the conversation that takes place alongside the show at Information Week. If you're listening on a streaming version, we appreciate that and hope that one Friday you'll just decide to come on over and share your thoughts with us. Well, for Scott, for Charlie, for everyone here at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. See you next week.